This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This podcast is proudly in association with HelloFresh. HelloFresh is a subscription-based meal kit company that delivers amazing recipes straight to your door. On the app, you'll be able to choose your weekly recipes to meal plan your week. They deliver fresh ingredients straight to your door to make the recipes that have carefully been selected. With step-by-step recipe cards, there's no need to be a chef to cook delicious meals. You have full flexibility on what meals you get and when you get them. It's easy to add extra portions, change recipes, modify your delivery time, or pause your deliveries. We are also delighted to offer a 60% discount to West Ham fans on the first box and then a 25% discount on the following 2 months when you use the code WESTHAMWAY in capital letters. So download the HelloFresh app or visit the website www.hellofresh.co.uk/WESTHAMWAY to get these delicious, easy-to-make meals sent straight to your door. HelloFresh, dinner is solved.
You're listening to the West Ham Way podcast with Dave and X. Oi, oi!
Hello and welcome to the West Ham Way podcast with myself, Dave Walker, an ex-WHU employee. With X back, we reflect on our trip to Switzerland and Germany, smashing Freiburg at home, a wonder goal from Kudus, Leverkusen in the quarter final, a draw against Aston Villa, the combination of VAR incompetency and a ridiculous rulebook killing the game, and a first goal for Antonio since August, before getting the latest news from X and answering questions from patrons of the West Ham Way. Boy is back. Hooray! Sort of. X, we've missed you, mate. How you doing?
I've been better, mate, to be honest with you. I think in terms of fitness, I'm probably at 30 to 25% match fitness at the moment. But yeah, it's been a struggle. Not been great. But my message to everyone is to savour your health while you've got it, because it's quite dramatic how things can change. But on the long haul, I'm sure I'll be better in the not too distant future.
So are you prepared to squash the rumours that this is all in relation to the penis reduction operation that you had?
Well, at the moment, there's no evidence to suggest either way. I'm still waiting the results on that. But yeah, at the moment, having taken 3 inches off is to down to 12 is quite a challenge for me. But
I was going to say, because obviously, your recovery is the priority, and I don't want to put pressure on you, but we do intend on using the offcuts for the auction at the next event. So, but I'll leave that with you anyway. So, like I say, no pressure on that.
What a way to make everyone else feel sick as well, to bring them down.
Well, look, a lot of people, jokes aside, have been asking after you and wanted to know what the issue has been. Can you share that with us? Would you rather not?
It's hard to know. The doctors have put it down, and it sounds ridiculous, to post-concussion trauma. So if you take it back to the show where I talked about limbs at Everton, as I said then, as what happened, a bloke fell over the top and elbowed me as he went through. Then as I sort of helped him to his feet, he gave me a massive bear hug, and he was taller than me and bigger, so my nose went into his chest. and it made this like crack noise, and then just a load of water came out, and it wasn't blood. Well, I mixed a little bit of blood, but not much, mainly water. And then I woke up to the podcast that Monday, and so had a massive headache, took paracetamols, and just thought, oh, it was a headache. Then obviously we went to Germany, and I started to feel really rough out there, and then got back, and then on the Saturday, so the Saturday after we got back, I just felt horrendous, went to the hospital, but I was throwing up constantly with massive dizziness and headache, and then they just basically said I've got post-concussion trauma, but I don't think that I have. I think I've been misdiagnosed, so today or tomorrow I'm going to try and go to the doctors and get a second verdict, because I mean I've had this verdict from four people now, so like to think it's the same verdict, they are right, but I've had much worse head injuries and those injuries than this, and never felt like this. So we'll see what happens, but I do apologise to everyone. I'm not going to be on best form today, but you're putting in a shift for West Ham, right?
Yeah, and credit to you for that, mate. I mean, I'm sure you won't mind me sharing that you are actually doing this from your bed with your phone on your chest at the moment. So if that isn't commitment, I don't know what is.
And apologies to the sound quality, because people do pick up when I have dodgy sound quality. This one is beyond my ability to do anything, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to say as well that the flying didn't help, did it, really, with the pressure in your head?
So. Yeah, don't think so. I mean, I've said that to the doctors, and I've Googled it, and apparently there is no link, but who knows, mate, you know, a short flight like that. Yeah. And, you know, we were very busy, weren't we? We went to Zurich, and then we went to Germany, and then back to Zurich. And, you know, I probably didn't eat the best either. And, you know, well, I was probably should have been resting. So, yeah, it's probably a combination of various things, really. But
yeah, you haven't had the best of luck, mate. I mean, your bad luck started at City Airport, didn't it? For the flight over to Zurich. I mean, if you remember the encounter that you had with the woman, I mean, she was unbelievable through security.
Forgot about that. Yeah, we weren't even in Liverpool. Usually that happens in Liverpool, but yeah, I'd actually forgotten about that. But yeah, maybe that was why I'm this ill. Maybe she was some voodoo witch that has put some kind of spell on me.
Well, mate, nothing would surprise me with your luck at the moment. So for context, me and X are queuing up for security at City Airport. It was our first time there, actually, flying from that airport. And there was this woman, and I suppose she can only be described as someone that's power hungry. You know, some people put on a uniform and they think they turn into superheroes, don't they? And I think this woman was one of them. And she was constantly shouting orders in the queue, you know, bin any plastics, remove any liquids, place electronics in the tray, remove belts and hats. And then X, being X, has very respectfully asked a fair question, really, in relation to whether we have to put our liquids in a plastic bag, because I think there's new rules potentially in place where you don't have to do that, which made you unsure as to whether you needed to now or not.
Well, and we have to do it on the way back as well.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a fair question that X is asking. And she goes, well, if you were listening, you'd know the answer, wouldn't you? And I know X, right? He's the loveliest, placid man on the planet. But I could see in his face that he was feeling a mixture of shock and uncontrollable rage at being spoken to like a naughty little kid. And he's gone, excuse me? She said, you should have been listening. Everyone else seems to know the answer because they were listening. And X says, no, they don't. No, no one's listening to you because you're just continuously shouting at people. And she said, well, maybe I shouldn't bother then. And X said, yeah, you shouldn't bother because no one's listening to you. And then X then proceeded to spend the next 10 minutes going through security, making it his mission to make an official complaint against this person. And it didn't really get your trip off to the best of starts, mate, did it?
No, exactly. I think, like I say, maybe she, what was her name? I did get her name.
I can't remember, actually.
No, it's like Janice or something like that. I should have remembered for future complaints. But I did point her out. I went up to the security guard and said, see that woman over there with the grizzly ginger coloured hair? She's been really rude. And he said, yeah, old Janice, yeah, she's got a bit of a reputation for that. He obviously does it all the time. I was so horrible lately, but yeah, I think she's there. I think she's got me back somehow.
Yeah. Oh God. Well, I mean, then we flew to Zurich because West Ham fans will know that Freiburg isn't the easiest place to get to. You can't go there directly. So we chose Zurich, which was quite nice to be able to tick another place off and have a different passport stamp. And the plan was to drive to Freiburg. And, you know, because, you know, sometimes on occasions on away days in this country, X drives. I made the decision that I would fairly say, do you know what, whilst we're over there, I'll do the driving. So he said, are you sure? He said, that would be nice. I said, yeah, of course, not a problem at all. So we're in Zurich, stayed the night in Zurich, and then the next day we drove from Zurich to Freiburg, which actually was a pretty sweet journey. It was about, I don't know, an hour and 40 minutes or something like that. And we rented a car. And like I said, I'd drive. X got in and he started saying stuff like, oh, this makes a nice change. And, you know, I could get used to this and I might even have a little sleep. And Freiburg, here we come, right? He's living his best life in the passenger seat. And as I've gone to pull out of the parking space...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, mate, it was like it was yesterday, right? As we've pulled out of the parking space, we've just heard this massive crunch, haven't we? And it was a massive crunch. And X has gone, what the fuck have you done? Get out and check. And I could see that any form of relaxation, X was feeling completely drained from his body at this point. And I look back, X, and I laugh in contrast to our reactions, because my reaction to that was, oh, the insurance will cover it. You're like, how do you know you never booked it? We've gone from buzzing for the trip to just fucking like having an argument with each other, and I've had to pull over, get out, and check the wing of the car, because I was convinced on the back of the crunch that I'd absolutely scratched the shit out of it on one of the pillars that we were parked next to. But to this day, and it is a complete mystery, we've got out, there's not a scratch on it. So I don't know what it can only be something under the car. Because that's the only explanation. Yeah. There's no way you can have a crunch like that and there'd not be any damage anywhere. So, you know, we got away with one now.
Bank account. Well, you say that. I did notice in our bank account yesterday that they've taken that £2,000 is pending at the moment from them. So I don't know what that's about. I'm hoping that's the deposit that's not actually going to leave our account. But at the moment, that is currently sitting in our bank account. So we should see.
Oh, God. Well, I didn't know that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, fingers crossed on that.
Don't deal with it either. I just love the idea. You're so laid back. You're happy to probably drive with maybe the wing mirror for half off, the tyres crunched in, your door probably not even opening. The insurance will deal with it without even bothering to check what damage is done.
Yeah. Your head's half severed, hanging off on the side of the shoulder. And insurance will cover it, mate. Don't worry about
maybe
it.
Maybe this is why I'm so ill. Maybe that's what that noise was.
Well, to be honest, I mean, I think I probably caused a bit of your trauma, because from memory, I think I nearly killed us twice on the motorway, didn't I? Once for driving too close to the lorry. And then later underestimating that hairpin right, if you remember. I think your soul left your body for a minute.
Well, I think maybe it's JD damage, but I don't know if you can drive in a straight line, which actually is quite concerning for us, for someone that is driving you somewhere. So the fact that it happened a couple of times, I thought, right, don't say anything, because I'm just grateful to be given the lifts, and don't comment, just keep quiet. And then when that lorry went, brah, and you went, why? What's that about? And I went, mate, you're literally driving into his lane. Like, and then I thought I have to say something. The fact that I'm still here is actually, maybe I should be grateful.
It's definitely aged you 10 years.
Yeah,
I think
that's different what it is. Maybe about 80. So naturally, I am on my way out.
So live from his deathbed, we can continue this podcast. And then
podcast ever recorded. It'll be quite a sad moment.
Yeah, it could be. On the other end, we'll make a shitload on the offcuts from your penis reduction operation. Swings and roundabouts, really, isn't it? Always worth so much more when a person's dead.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it won't be me that makes the money, will it?
And to be fair, mate, I won't. I think for nostalgic reasons, I'll just make a pendant out of it or something. You know, I won't want to profit from it. It wouldn't feel right, you know?
Yeah. Thanks, mate.
I'm sure that means a lot to you, but getting back to the story of our trip, that we then of course went on to the game, and I think the less said about that the better. A really poor performance from us, which was the start of you not really feeling well. That's when I started to notice it more than anything, to be honest. But you know, that aside, what did you think of Zurich? Because it was nice to get a passport stamped for a new country, but I've got mixed reviews about it, really. I don't know how you felt.
It was a nice place. Like, you know, I could see living there and being quite happy. It was very efficient, very like as you would expect a city to be. You know, lots of options in terms of restaurants and things to do. No sort of real landmarks that you think, oh, I've really got to go and see that, or I really want to see this. So that's one thing. But the most thing that stands out for me, and I'm sure you'll say the same, is the cost of everything. And, you know, we had that McDonald's when we first got there, because Booking's manager managed to get a hotel that was literally adjacent to a McDonald's. So that's the first thing we did. And, and then we had I had a Big Mac meal, possibly. You had probably a similar thing, and it came to the equivalent of £50, didn't it?
So, yeah, like, it's incredible.
It was ridiculous. Taxi into town was 93. It was only like 5 miles or something.
Yeah, it was. It was honestly about a 15-minute journey. And the weird thing is, going to the city centre from where we were, I think was about 35 to 40 quid in an Uber, because they're notoriously cheaper. And even that's expensive, by the way. Like, if you did the same journey over here, it probably cost you about 8 quid. But coming back, we got a city cab, and like X said, it was 93 quid for the same journey. Even the cabbie was like, you should be using Ubers, mate. You know, that's how expensive they are. I mean, the tip of the iceberg for me was I'd done 83 quid at the airport coming home on 6 Toblerones and a fucking fridge magnet. So, Yeah. 83 quid.
That was obviously my mental state at that point of this illness. I had no idea you spent that much.
Yeah, it was outrageous, mate. I mean, it's a good job we're millionaires now, because that would have given me the right hump.
Thank God for Patreon, eh?
Free Toblerones for everyone. What did you think of Freiburg? Because we didn't actually see much of the city centre as such, did we? We stayed just outside of it, which I thought was a little bit of a shithole, and its saving grace was, of course, the lovely kebab shop it had. Would you agree with that, or am I being a little bit harsh?
Well, I think that's probably fair. I mean, to give Freiburg some form of defence, as you said, we didn't really see any of it other than the kebab shop and the stadium. So to write a whole city off based on that is probably a little bit harsh. But it was all right. The stadium was fine, I have to say. This last week's a bit of a blur to me, so I can't even really remember it that much. But it was one of those things. At the end of the day, it was a good atmosphere. It always is, it seems, in Germany. And West Ham didn't perform. But it was just halfway in a two-leg tie, as was proven. And so, ultimately, wasn't a bad result with the benefit of hindsight. But, yeah, Freiburg is a place I wouldn't say it's top of my list to go back to. But I wouldn't say as bad as some of the other places we've been at times as well.
No, I think that's a fair assessment, actually. Well, then, after that poor performance in Europe, we had Burnley at home, a game we fully expected to win. Fair to say, a game of two halves, the first being terrible, the second much better, with Danny Ings making a difference and securing a point at least. And, of course, I'm glossing over some of these games because they do seem like a thing of the past. And on the back of the two games we've mentioned, the fan base generally feeling quite deflated, I think, which happens every now and then under the Moyes regime.
Every now and then, all the time.
It does, of course. It does, that with the Moyes okie-cokie. But the second leg against Freiburg, I mean, this was massive for different reasons. We had to win. And when we did, it was a brilliant result, wasn't it, mate?
Yeah, I mean, the second half against Burnley and then the full game against Freiburg was brilliant performance. And, you know, when West Ham go out to attack from the start is when we're at our best. And, you know, that is why the criticism of Moyes at times can be justified, because you think to yourself, why can't he just do this from the start? Why can't we attack like this from the start? And the Freiburg game was just the perfect example of everything clicking. I thought we played really, really well, attacking-wise especially. We were great. I think the attack, as it is, with Paquetá as a 10 and then Kudos Bowen either side of Antonio is the best fit for now. And I thought that showed great goals, obviously, especially Kudos, but a couple of other really good ones as well. And I just thought generally it was a very, very good performance, and delighted for the club and for Moyes and the players that, you know, that we got that performance. And, you know, you look at the blacks and whites of it, as I keep saying every single time, and we are seventh from now in another European quarterfinal, and this is why I know there's more depth to it. And as West Ham fans, we appreciate the greater depth of style of play and substitutions, because I thought they were an issue against Villa and negativity. We understand that bigger picture, but it's also why you can understand outsiders that just look in at maybe results, think what the hell is wrong with West Ham fans, because when you take it as simply as the facts do look positive.
Yeah. I know. I mean, they're even talking about it on Sky today, I noticed, and the same old question, you know, are our expectations realistic and what do West Ham fans want? I mean, that topic of discussion is getting boring now as well from outsiders looking in, and it's frustrating for us.
Things ridiculous, mate. It's so boring. I know we talk about ourselves because we have to do the West Ham show, but the constant stuff on Twitter every time I log on without fail. There's the boys out, so the boys in. It's just getting embarrassing and stupid now. We used to take the mickey out of Arsenal fans for Wenger. We even sung a song about it, you know. Yeah. And we're exactly the same.
Yeah, it's true, mate. It's true. And I think possibly the reason there is such a divide is because there is a kind of viable argument for both. If you do look at the black and whites of it, there are a number of fans that would say, that's all I care about. You know, even if we're dog shit week after week, if we're qualifying for Europe and we're winning trophies and, you know, we're in a quarter final now of a Europa League, that's all I care about. And then there are fans that will pick the bones out of Moyes' management and say, do you know what, we could go even further with a better manager than David Moyes. So there is a viable argument to both. And I think that's why there is just a constant divide, because, you know, when things are going against Moyes, people can defend him. When they're going for him, people can say, well, actually, we want even more. So it's just a never-ending argument. It really is. And it is quite frustrating. And talking of frustrating, and you have alluded to it there, this is my biggest bugbear, really, is firstly, the way we set up against teams week after week after week. We're so predictable that I'm actually surprised we're doing as well as we are, because I think we are that predictable and we do only seem to have that plan A and not necessarily a plan B when it's going wrong. But we set up against teams that are worse than us in the same way. I don't understand that and I'll never understand that. You should take the game to these teams, especially when you're playing at home. Brentford is the perfect example of that. Look at the start we made. We didn't sit back. We went at them from the get-go and we smashed them. You know, Freiburg, same thing. And we don't do that enough. And I think at times he can be quite cowardly with his tactics. And that is frustrating for me, because especially when you know that maybe with a different tactic and a different approach to the game, we could see a much different result. I mean, you know, I had the sort of confusing conversation with Mad Dog with the Burnley game. I mean, he said, you know, the first half, the players are tired. You could see that the European campaign is taking its toll. We only played on the Thursday. Which I know that's an age-old argument, but then at the same time, who had the magic wand at half-time then? Because if that's true, physically, in the second half, they should be even worse and have even less energy. But they came out of the traps absolutely storming, scored two goals, and left us all thinking, actually, David, if you would have started the game how you finished it, then we probably would have won that game 4-0, because Burnley are nothing special. So he does come with his frustrations. He really does. But at the end of the day, we are talking about a positive result in relation to Freiburg, because it was a big win. One that was psychologically important for the players, important for the morale of the fans, important for the Moyes okie-dokie, and of course important for us to qualify for the quarterfinal of the Europa League, which we now know will be against Leverkusen. How do you feel about that draw?
Well, Freiburg played Leverkusen yesterday. I don't know if you saw. And the game, I think it was at Freiburg, and the game finished 3-2 to Leverkusen. Now, Leverkusen are absolutely battering the German league this season. And credit to Xavi Alonso, classy player and obviously a classy manager. A great job there. It's a tough draw, but look, what that result does, that 5-0 result against Freiburg, does is show that when we're on our form, we can beat anyone convincingly. You know, Freiburg are no mugs. They wouldn't be in this tournament if they were. A German side in this tournament has to be decent, because aside from Munich and Dortmund, maybe, and now Leverkusen, you're talking about one of the better German teams last season. And, all right, they might not replicate it as much this year, but to be where they are, they have to be semi-decent. And we absolutely battered them. Now, Leverkusen is a tough draw. I mean, I don't think they've actually lost a game this season, if my stats are correct, in terms of their league. But then you look, Karabag, you know, a team from Azerbaijan with, like, very amateur, well, I don't know if they are amateur players, probably not, but certainly not to the calibre of Premier League players. They almost knocked that out. Leverkusen, so they are there to be beaten. And I think Moyes at the moment, and obviously it's easy to say because we won a trophy and we've got such a good record in Europe, but I think Moyes' dreams actually is in Europe at the moment. And I think I think we can play Leverkusen with confidence, and I think it helps that we're away the first leg again, so we know what we've got to do when we come back to the London Stadium. And I think if we could just get a draw, or even like Freiburg, a 1-0 loss, it's not the end of the world. And then we come back and we play how we did at London Stadium, I feel confident we could get a result. Of course, Leverkusen are better than Freiburg significantly, but the way we played against Freiburg, I think we could have beaten any team on our day at that point, particularly a team in Europe. And so yeah. I think there's worse than draws. I'm glad. I was desperate to avoid Liverpool, which we've done.
Yes.
Unless we get to the final and they get to the final, which is good. I wanted to avoid Milan. We've avoided them to the semis. I would have preferred Benfica, I think, out of all the teams that were left. But at the end of the day, at this stage of a European trophy, especially the Europa League, you have to expect a good team. So I'm okay with the draw. Yeah.
It's a tough game. Like you said, they're a good side. They're smashing the German league at the moment. But I think you make some really good points there, in the sense that cup competitions almost just create a different type of fixture. I mean, even in this country, you've just seen Coventry City go through to the semi-final of the FA Cup. Yeah. And the FA Cup and the League Cup is renowned for giant killings and shocks. Yeah. And banana skins. So there's something about a cup competition that does that. And I think there is also the element of being unpredictable in Europe, because ironically, I talk about how predictable I think we are to play against in the Premier League. But we're not in Europe. And I think that's one of the reasons we've been so successful in Europe so far. So you're absolutely right. You know, anyone is beatable if they have an off day and the opposition are on it. And 100 million% we're capable of that against Leverkusen. But again, it depends, you know, what West Ham turns up and what Leverkusen turns up. And it might just be a case of fine margins, you know, decisions going against you. And fucking hell, we'll come across that in a minute. But, you know, taking chances when you take, not making mistakes, it could come down to real fine margins. But it is a tough game. But what game ain't going to be tough in the quarterfinal of a European Cup competition? You know, we're sort of lucky to be here, I suppose. But it's tough. But I think we've got every chance. If the stars align for us. And talking about Freiburg, interestingly, subsequently, the Freiburg manager has just announced that he's leaving at the end of the season after 13 years. Did you know that?
No, I didn't. No, that's what losing to David Moyes 5-0 does to you then, I guess.
There you go. He's retiring managers now. Fucking hell, Fanta Pubes is something else, isn't he? well, let's talk about the game against Aston Villa yesterday, because it's a tough game these days. They absolutely demolished us at Villa Park earlier in the season. And with both clubs having a big week in Europe, it was going to be an interesting game. Give us your thoughts on the performance and the result.
I thought we played well in the first half. I thought we, at the start of the second, we were much better for having Antonio. And shout out to him. I think he's made a big difference in the games, like against Freiburg and against Aston Villa. He's contributed massively, which is good. We were brilliant, but playing well until he went off. And then once we took him off and Villa made some subs, it gave them back the momentum, and I thought we weren't as strong. I question the substitution of Antonio for Johnson. You know, Antonio is well known in the club. I mean, this is something I could probably put in my section now, but I think it's so well known, it's not really news, but it's just almost accepted. He can only play up to like the 65th minute or so, and it's almost like a unwritten rule as such that you take him off around about that time. So it's always going to happen, but I can see the logic behind putting Johnson on, as in put Bowen up top, who's been doing well there, and have a more defensive player on the right. But personally, I'd have put Danny Ings on, because I thought he made a difference against Burnley. He scored against Burnley where he hasn't scored for ages. He's also played well against Sheffield United not that long ago. So he's had a bit of an impact recently, and the only way he's going to have more continued impact as the game opportunities. So I personally would have brought him on. I thought Cresswell coming on for Emerson, I kind of get it because Emerson was injured but that I'm not sure I would have made that. If Emerson, depends how knackered Emerson was, I think there is talk that he actually asked to come off. So that's the case, that you can't question it. But the substitution for me changed the game, and annoyingly, I think Villa weren't very great. I think we could have got ahead by more than we did. Didn't take our chances. Then obviously VAR had a massively significant, the referee a massive significance on the game. And ultimately, a draw is a good result against Aston Villa. If you take it again on paper, but given the bigger context of how the game was and how the game was shaping, particularly in the first half, then it feels a bit like 2 points dropped rather than 1 point gain.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do think Villa were there for the taking. I think they looked more tired than we certainly did. I think we the first half was good. I want to talk to you about the coup de skull that never was. For me, yeah. If that's a foul on a goalkeeper, the fucking game is gone. I mean, I already think it's dead anyway because it's shitty technology and the shitty people that sit behind it. But, I mean, Christ almighty, I think it would be heavy saying it was a nudge, let alone a shove. Yeah. And ultimately, that's why he's stopped the game, because of a little nudge on the keeper. I mean, are these men or mouse? I think that's unbelievably frustrating. So first and foremost, I think that was a poor decision. Now, again, it comes down to whether it is part of the letter of the law that it should have been disallowed. Well, if that's the case, you've got to change the letter of the law, because this is a contact sport, you know, or at least it should be. And it's like these goalkeepers are a protected species. I think if Antonio would have nudged the centre half in the same way, it wouldn't have been disallowed. So what makes the keeper any different? In fact, the keeper has more of an advantage because he can use his hands to catch the ball. So we should get less protection, I think. I don't know. I mean,
about the play as well.
Yeah, I know. I don't know. I mean, we have to talk about these VAR decisions, because, again, it's split a lot of people as to whether they were the right decisions or the wrong decisions. I mean, apparently with Antonio scoring, it was, again, by the letter of the law, an unintentional handball in the process of scoring. That's a rule that needs to change as well. I mean, how do we know that Emerson's handball, for example, wasn't part of a goal-scoring process for Villa? But that's different because he's a defender. You know, and then some people say, well, if it hits your hand, it should be a penalty. I mean, you look at the one that we should have had last week. Fucking hell. That was a definition of being in an unnatural position. But we never got that go our way. But for that, Antonio, I can't see how he's in an unnatural position. And again, if it purely comes down to unintentionally using a handball in the process of scoring, then it's a rule that's got to change, surely. Because the scrutiny that goes into every aspect of attacking play is just killing it, isn't it? I mean, someone could be offside by their fucking foreskin these days. You know, and then you talk about the handball. I think part of the problem I've got, and I'm sure some fans will relate to this, I don't understand the rules anymore, X. That's what it is, because I used to understand it when it was less complicated and it was simple and football was a more enjoyable game. But now it seems like all these little loopholes are being brought into football around certain rules that are being put in place that are overcomplicating it for the referees. And I think at times they struggle to understand the rules. And what happens is the end result is we have a completely messy game, which has absolutely killed the momentum of football. If you look at one of the decisions, it took over 5 fucking minutes to find the right decision, by the way, a Premier League record. To ultimately, in my opinion, and it's just my opinion, I'm going against the letter of the law now, be what should be the wrong decision, in my opinion. So I was fuming with that. I mean, what do you think of the disallowed goals for Antonio and Souček? Do you think they were right or wrong? Because it has created a little bit of a split in opinions.
I think they were right, by the letter of the law. The letter of the law, as I understand it, as you said earlier, as if a hand touches the ball before a goal, it's a handball. Now, both times, particularly Souček's, that definitely happened. So if you look at the letter of the law, then they both should have been disallowed. However, particularly Antonio's one, I just don't see that that touch has influenced the ball going in. It would have come off his thigh anyway, and it would have still gone in. And so this is where there's like a grey cloud for me, because if you, like, you know, Maradona's go against England, for example, where you blatantly wouldn't have scored, if it hadn't been for your hand, then I get it. But if it was the question of it just hit the hand as it was about to hit the knee, or he would have tapped it in anyway, it's just brushed off the hand, then it's not changed the direction of the ball, then I've got an issue with it. So I've got more of an issue with Antonio's one than Souček's, because for me, he didn't do it intentionally, but Souček's arm did almost steer the ball towards the goal. Whereas with Antonio's, I think he would have scored it anyway. And so it's just, and as you said earlier, it's just the overcomplication of everything now that you can make an argument for either. Like, I can see, again, it's a bit like the Moyes situation. I can see both arguments. I can see people that are infuriated with it and think it's an absolute joke that these decisions have gone against us, particularly when you take into account the one at Freiburg that wasn't given. But actually, the rule is, if it hits your hand, it's a and it goes and it's influencing the goal, there's a handball. So technically, if you want me to be committed to a decision, I think both decisions were right. However, where I have my issue is the one that Kudos scored, because I don't think that's a foul, and the ref blew up before it was given, before the play had finished, which I didn't think they were meant to do. The ref blew, and then Kudos scored. That causes a problem, and I don't think it was a foul, so I think that goal should have stood. And the other thing that happened in that game was Mavropanos got booked for throwing the ball away.
Yeah.
And then their player, who was already on a booking, did the exact same thing and didn't get a booking. Now, that's where, for me, the biggest issues lay, because that's not a question of a different interpretation of the rule or what the correct interpretation of the rule is. That's just an inconsistency, and that's just the referee not applying it. And all the West Ham players went up to him and said, look, he's been booked. He's just thrown the ball away. He's just booked Mavropanos. You can see it. And he still doesn't make the decision. Why is VAR not coming into his ear then and saying, you really should be sending him off because he's just done something he's just put another player for? You know, it might not have made a difference to the game. There was about 10 minutes left or whatever, but it's still the rules. And this is when I have my biggest issue. It's not so much goals being disallowed for minor things, it's the inconsistencies. Because a goal like those two goals we scored yesterday, I'm sure there's probably other examples in the league where those goals would have been given. And it's just frustrating that there's such an inconsistency when this whole process is meant to iron that out.
Mm, exactly that. And again, you know, when it comes to VAR, the referee for Souček's goal initially gave the goal. Yeah. And VAR was supposed to be used to review and potentially reverse a wrong decision if it's clear and obvious, apparently. Yeah. So I looked into this and I Googled it, and it says, if the VAR team believe the on-field referee has misjudged what happened on the pitch, they will class it as clear and obvious, in a sense that they think there's a really, really obvious mistake that's been made. So then they're going to start to review it to then provide proof and evidence that that goal should be overturned, right? But how can it be clear and obvious if it's taken them over five fucking minutes to make the decision?
Yeah,
because, you know, if you don't know or you're not sure, just give the attackers the benefit of the fucking doubt. But it's taken over 5 minutes, which has proved in itself that it's not clear and obvious, because it wouldn't have taken you to break a Premier League record to make a fucking decision that is just ridiculous. Yeah. And of course, it was never going to go away because we're not a top four club. And this, again, when you look at just how much bad luck we've had with VAR, it does open it up to the conspiracy theorists out there. And some will say it's ridiculous. Some will say it's a victim mentality. Others will say, do you know what? Actually, you've got a point when you look at some of these isolated situations, you know?
I think you make a very good point there, mate, particularly with the time it took to make the decision. Because as you say, it's there to overturn a clear and obvious mistake. The decision was it was a goal by the ref on the pitch. over 5 minutes to make a decision shows it's not clear and obvious mistake. I think you made a very good point and it's spot on. And it's very, very frustrating that once again, West Ham are the club that break these records of VAR times and stuff. And ultimately, the beauty that makes football, in my opinion, and obviously I'm biased, but I'm sure everyone that's listening to this show is biased as well, that the beauty that makes football the best game in the world ahead of rugby, cricket, NFL, tennis, etc., is because it's what it used to be, so free-flowing and so passionate, and a goal would mean so much. And you could, that feeling of euphoria when the ball, you know, went into the net, etc., that's what made football special and so passionate. Scoring a goal, cheery. Because I, you know, that's the first time I've been jumped out of my seat in 2 weeks. Like, I jumped out of my seat like that, and my family, like, oh my God, it's better. But that was obviously lasted for about 5 seconds.
It's a miracle, we can walk.
Exactly. Yeah, I sat down again 5 seconds after, but it gives you that like moment of like, wow. And then to wait 5 minutes for it ultimately to be disallowed. I can't celebrate a goal now properly until they're standing at the centre circle when the opposition's kicked off, because there's always that fear in the back of my mind that it's going to be chalked off, and that takes away essentially one of the most beautiful things about football. So I think if a VAR decision has to take, isn't instant, as in it can't be made within 30 seconds, or let's just say 2 minutes for argument's sake, anything that goes beyond 2 minutes, you just have to go with whatever decision the referee's gone with on the field of play. And if it ends ultimately to be wrong after 3 extra minutes of looking at it, well, that's just one of those things, but it proves that it wasn't that obvious, and you just get on with it. And it's just, it's just very frustrating because, no, I'm not, my mind isn't in the best shape at the moment, but from memory, you know, you talk about the Sheffield United game, you talk about the Aston Villa game, you talk about so many games throughout this season where we've had points or goals not given that we should have got, you know, our league position. We could be right up there, you know, looking at a good chance of getting in the Champions League. But because of these decisions, we're not. And as you say, ultimately, the teams that sit in those Champions League positions are the ones that are the big clubs. Incidentally, on that note, I don't know if you heard what happened with the FA Cup draw. Did you see that?
No.
So we made the FA Cup draw this weekend, and it was very, I don't know how to describe it, like laid back. It's probably one way or blasé or whatever, but they did it in the studio. And apparently the other like pundits were sitting there. I didn't actually see it, so I'm only going on what I've read. So I apologise if my interpretation's not entirely accurate. But Ian Rice, I think it was, drew out the teams, but they didn't say the numbers of the teams before. So when he drew it out, there was no like, oh, you Manchester United are going to be ball number two or whatever. He just drew it out and they just said what the teams were. Now, people are just saying that the whole draw was fixed. Now, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but it's worth looking at and people with more knowledge will be able to see. But obviously, Manchester United and Manchester City avoided each other. So the ideal draw would be for them to play each other in the FA Cup final. And once again, as always seems to happen with these draws, they went the way that would be best for the media and for the public, you know. So it's Man City, Chelsea, and Coventry, Manchester United. So, you know, likely the final is going to be Man City, Manchester United, which is what the media would want. And it just seems like another bit of evidence that you could suggest potentially has been rigged. And I mean, that is probably quite dramatic, but have a look after the show and see what people are saying about it. As I say, I'm in my bed, so I haven't really done the best research, but it definitely popped up on my phone earlier, people questioning it.
Yeah, mate, honestly, I have no question that there is corruption in football, unquestionably, because as I've said before, you know, the worst thing that could have happened to the Premier League that year was Leicester winning it, because it completely devalued the Premier League when it came to sponsors, global audiences, like everything in life, all the dark aspects of life, it's fueled by money. And this is the problem. you know, these things are believable, that it's corrupt and a draw's fixed, for example, and VAR going against certain clubs and going for certain clubs. It's all believable because there is a motive, because you want the Premier League to be the most attractive. And that's going to be the most attractive if you've got Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, Liverpool, Man United all at the very top of the table, and West Ham not being. You know, it's perfect for the Premier League to have it like that. So, of course, it makes sense to rig it, to work it in your favour, to then make you more attractive in terms of the financial aspect of it.
I've just Googled the FA Cup draw. Someone wants to make it right. And the headline says, FA Cup semi-final draw labelled most fixed ever as Man United get dreams high under unprofessional new format. And it is pretty much as I've described it. Ian Wright just pulling out the balls out of a hat. No, in the studio, no sort of, you know, they always cut to some of Lancaster Gate and stuff. None of that. And then just placed a hat and then just pulled out with no numbers being given before. And, yeah, and it says one supporter said this is the most fixed FA Cup draw I've ever seen. So unprofessional. Another declared draw for the FA Cup is a fix. Didn't say who had what number first. So, like, basically, they would pull out a number and say, no, team number one. And nobody knew what team number one was. So someone could see say in their ear, right, team number one's Manchester United.
Right.
Fucking
hell.
And then they draw out number two. Right, team number two is Coventry. So you couldn't check it beforehand. That makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I honestly, mate, I'm a big believer in corruption in football, and I think VAR is part of it. I really do. I hate the technology.
One day it's going to have to come out. I mean, why has there not been any whistleblowing? I mean, this is what gives me sort of mixed opinions on it, because you look at FIFA and all the corruption of FIFA and World Cup, like bids and hosts, and the fact that Qatar got a World Cup, and all the fact that Seb Blatter's been prosecuted because people whistleblowed and it all came out. Why has this corruption within the domestic game not ever came out? There must be someone that could whistleblow.
Well, and maybe that will happen. And maybe there are people that are going to be doing exactly that. I mean, the thing is, not wanting to have this podcast take a certain turn, but, you know, if you look in life, there are whistleblowers over some of the most scandalous things that happen in society and amongst elites and important people. But we're so brainwashed as a society to believe what the media are putting into our brains every single day, and what we read in papers, and what we're being manipulated by on social media on a daily basis, that I think even subconsciously we choose to ignore the proof and the evidence that are coming out from one person, for example, or two people or three people, versus an entire organisation, many of which have ties to the brainwashing and manipulation of society. And I think that this could well be a part of it. Maybe there already has been the old whistleblower, but no one's listened to them. You know, I don't know. But for me, there is evidence on it. And I hate the technology. I hate the people that sit behind it. And I hate what it's done to our game. I wish we could fuck it off. I really do. But, you know,
ideal world, would you basically in VAR, obviously keep goal line technology because that seems to have worked quite well, but other than that, VAR, if you was given the choice, would you literally bin it off completely, or would you moderate it or try and improve it or do anything different?
Categorically, I think it's had a good run, and I think we've been patient enough with it to see that I don't think it's ever going to work, mainly because of the lack of quality behind the people that are using it. And then, of course, you can throw in the potential corruption conspiracy theories, but we'll steer away from that for now. For me personally, I would scrap it tomorrow, and I would take the controversy and the infuriation of having certain decisions go against us on the back of one person making a snap decision and the linesman, because that's what we've always had in football. So why don't we just go back to it, because it was better then? You know, and you've said it right. The biggest crime for me is this technology killing the euphoria of scoring a goal, because there's no feeling like it. As a player or a fan, scoring a goal is everything. That's why you go to football, to see your team score more goals than the opposition and come away with 3 points. But it's killed that. It's absolutely killed that. And that's the perfect example. It's not just killed it instantly. It can leave you hanging on for 5 minutes. It is a Premier League record we got against Aston Villa. 5 minutes. And then you've got, if you actually look at the bigger picture, right? Let's say we play Tottenham away and we get a last minute winner and we're all going ballistic, and then it gets chalked off. And then you've got the absolute piss take of the home fans getting into the West Ham fans because we've celebrated a goal that hasn't stood. That actually is a case for inciting crowd trouble because it's created a situation where there's hatred on the terraces more so and the hate of the moment between home fans and away fans because of a decision that's been made.
That
so
happened,
I'd just rather scrap the whole fucking thing. It's shit. It's as simple as that. I don't like it. Goal line technology, for me, is the only form of technology that's been brilliant. Other than that, it relies on fucking numbheads to control it, and they're all incompetent. They're all either incompetent or corrupt or bottlers. So just lose the technology and just to have the officials on the pitch. Because I think linesmen are becoming redundant anyway. So give them more job stability and get rid of the technology and let's carry on as we were. Because as we were was where we all fell in love with football. Now more and more people are starting to hate the game. And that's sad, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that incident, like the hypothetical example you gave with Tottenham, that actually did happen with Chelsea, didn't it, last season?
Yeah,
Cornet scored.
Exactly.
In the last minute, and then that was ruled out. It was really hostile outside. I mean, it always is between West Ham and Chelsea, but
more so, you're right.
So, yeah, because of that goal, and you're right, it's something that, you know, is a real problem. And I don't know, like you say, like rugby and NFL and cricket and tennis all seem to have got it right. But the difference between those games is that those games are naturally more stop and start anyway. That's why they can fit in the technology because it fits in around their games. You know, like, for those of you that don't know NFL, you basically have four moves to try and get 10 yards, so it stops every move. While the defence and the offence set up and stuff, so there's natural breaks, whereas in football, it's meant to be continuous, so it's hard to then have these massive breaks in the middle of everything. And I don't know, it's such a disappointment, really, because I was a big advocate for bringing in VAR before it happened, because I thought it would even out the bias with the big clubs, because they wouldn't be able to get around it, because the facts would be on the VAR, so it wouldn't be down to an opinion or a biased judgment of an official, whereas actually now it seems to be even more so, which was the whole point of VAR, was to eliminate. So that's my biggest frustration.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, mate. And I just think, you know, when you look at the rules and they are massively overcomplicated and it drives us all mad, I think, you know, with handball, it should be a simple case of if the player's arms are in an unnatural position or it's intentional, then it's handball. Anything outside of those two, then it's not handball. It's as simple as that because it's so much easier to judge. And then if it comes to the offside, I mean, Jesus Christ, how many times as an attacker been given offside because of a stud or a toe or the skin of his elbow, and they're stopping the game to review this, and it's taking minutes and minutes. It's killing the momentum. It's creating frustration in the stands. Maybe there should be a rule, if we're going to continue using this technology, where we give the attacking player a leverage of 6 inches or something. So it's
well,
not
whole body, maybe. You know,
yeah, exactly.
Be a rule, like, rather than it being like part of your body's offside, why not do it the other way round? That if your whole body is offside, as in there's nothing in line, it's between you and the defender, because that would encourage more attacking play as well, because the attacker would always try and peel off the shoulder of the defender. So why not do it that way? Why not have it as in the last part of, if there's no body part in line with the defender, then you're off. But if you're in line, but your foot or your nose or your foreskin, as you've said, is offside, then you're not offside, as long as some part of your body is in line with the defender.
Yeah, exactly.
That would work better.
Yeah, yeah. And these talking points are in the interest of the game. And the interest of entertainment. What they brought this in for, well, so they say, and again, you know, the conspiracy theorists would disagree, is to right the wrongs in terms of the decisions that are made in a game and bring justice back to football and make sure that decisions are being made fairly and correctly. What this has proved so far since the technology's been in that game is that it hasn't done that. In fact, it's created even more controversy than there was without it. So if we're going to put up the white flag and say, actually, you know, we shouldn't be doing this just to purely justify decisions in a game, we're now going to use this technology in a more simple way and concentrate more on the entertainment aspect of football, then I think that would be a positive direction going forward if we have to fucking keep it, which I'm sure we do. But in an ideal world, I would just get rid of it. I really would. I think it's toxic for the game. I really believe that, and it's sad. It really is. We have to talk about a positive though, and there is a positive in terms of the goal against Villa, the first goal Antonio has scored since last August, which is quite incredible, which was made possible from a superb cross from Schuffel, who I thought had a really good game. The patrons gave man of the match to Alvarez, who seems to be going from strength to strength. Antonio in second place, and then Schuffel in third. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think Antonio's made a big difference since coming back. I think he gives us an option which we don't have without him. You know, there's debates whether we should keep him next year. I personally would. Obviously, would bring in another forward, maybe another two forwards. But I would have him in that squad because of the impact he can have. And when he's on his form, he can plays any defender. He's a real handful. That he showed that superb against Freiburg, and then obviously again against Villa. And it was a good finish. Put his head in where some players perhaps wouldn't. As you say, a great cross from Schuffel. Our resident is doing brilliantly. Apart from the yellow cards, obviously he's now suspended for the next three games, both in Europe and domestically. Which I'll cover in my section. But other than that, I think he's done brilliant. And yeah, I think that's probably fair result, decent save from Areola as well. And yeah, I'd say that's probably about what I would have done, yeah.
I think he had a good game as well, Areola, to be fair. The percentage of votes should have been more than it was, actually, because, again, I think he's very consistent. Another good game from him.
We're in a very good position in terms of keepers, I think.
Yeah.
Again, I'm going to talk about this in my section, but you know, I think the fact we've got Areola, he's only 29, 30. I think he's a great one for the next 3 or 4 years. I think Fabianski is a really good backup keeper. And obviously, we've got a lot of young talent. You've got Finn Herrick, England under-18s keeper. You've got Trot. You've got Anang. You've got Heiji. You've got Knightsbridge. You've got Mason Terry. There's so many keepers. I think it's the strongest we've ever been in terms of squad depth for goalkeeper.
Yeah, yeah, I make you right. Well, here's what the gaffer had to say after the game.
David, a dramatic game. What's your overall assessment?
Pleased with how the players performed. I thought the players did a really good job. Aston Villa were the better team for the majority in the second half, but we hung in there and still got ourselves a couple of opportunities to win the game. But we were disappointed to concede, but the players had done a good job.
And the two goals that you had ruled out, can you see the fairness in those decisions?
It's not for me to say. You might as well ask the VAR. Why? No point in asking me. We think they're goals, but VAR are the ones who decide them, so not us.
Is it the spirit of the law or the application of the law that you wouldn't be happy about?
I don't really know. Your question means sort of nothing to me, to tell you the truth. At the moment, I'm just saying, sorry, I've not got any answers for you regarding it.
Considering the setbacks that your team had with those goals being ruled out, how would you commend the spirit that they've shown here?
As I said there, I thought they played incredibly well today, done a great job, the team. I thought, especially in the first half, we played very well and made it difficult for Villa. They improved in the second half, but great credit to the players. You know, we had a big win in midweek and we've got a draw today, but it should have been all 3 points, to be honest.
And good to see Mikel Antonio firing on all cylinders again.
Good to get a goal. That's what we want from Mick. We want him to get goals, part of his game. He does a great job for the team. It's the goals that we need from him.
How do you feel about this international break? Because it comes at a time now where your form has really picked up.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, obviously we're going to have a few suspensions going forward now, like every other club. And, so we just need to get the players back, get them ready to go. It's an exciting period we've got coming up in the next few months, so we want to finish it well.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.